Day two is wrapped. We'll add some perspective to the final results from Indiana and Nebraska that were released last night. And the scouts on the Pro Farmer Tour are on to day three. We'll snag a few of the guys and get an update on what they're seeing. And we'll get a preview from somebody that's already seen it.
Live from day three via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Kevin McNew, chief economist at FBN. Then we've got Mark Bernard, Sherman Newland, and Ted Seifried. And in the final segment, stay tuned for Christoph Jospy and Margaret Olhem from Ag Launch. Right after the news, we've got Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's your beloved host, Jeff Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. I think everybody is dry this morning out there on the crop tour.
They're dry, you say.
Okay. Yeah. So they're out on day three. That means that we're covering the western three crop districts in Iowa.
Yeah, see, here's my thing, though. Yeah. We don't want those western three crop districts of Iowa to be dry today, do we?
That is exactly right. Just got a call from my buddy Jay Merriman, who is one of the scouts out there. He has started off in far southwest Iowa. He's making his way north, got into Cass County, and he said that's where the stark difference is. That's where you can really tell the difference on when conditions turn really dry, getting into the crop district four, I believe, there in west central Iowa. We've got Emily Carlin with us today, too. Again, how you doing, Em?
Hey, we're doing great. We are on day three. Yes. I can't even believe it. And we're starting to move into those areas that I think are most highly anticipated to be viewed this week. And just how the scouts are going to handle it, they've got a heck of a time ahead of them.
Right, exactly. Okay, hey, we got to save some time for Margie. So let's go ahead and get to the news. What do you got, bud?
Sure. Well, as far as results from yesterday, day two of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, we've got an average corn yield potential of 175.2 bushels per acre for Nebraska. Compare that to 172.6 last year. Soybean pod counts in Nebraska in a 3x3 square, 1,298 for Nebraska, compares to 1,210.8 pods in last year's tour results. Flip it over to the eastern side. Indiana samples, average corn yield 179.8 bushels per acre, 161.5 bushels last year. Pod counts in that 3x3 foot square averaged 1,281.1 for Indiana. Compare that to 923.9 pods last year. And hey, by the way, you can get more perspective from tour leaders in their From the Rose columns on ProFarmer.com.
Do it.
You got to go there and get that. And if you're not registered for tonight's meeting and tomorrow night's meetings, you can do that at ProFarmer.com as well.
For free.
Yep, you can do it for free. Yeah. Indiana up 11.4% from last year, Emily.
Yeah. I mean,
that's on corn yield.
It's really kind of a remarkable crop over there for what they found. I mean, a lot of the scout comments that were coming in with their data yesterday were revolved around some of that green snap area, right? Yep. Which Indiana, it's not as flat as Illinois is. And so you don't normally see it as much. So to see some of those comments coming in, they definitely saw more disease over there, I think, than what they've seen in years past. And just honestly, a very, very mixed bag of maturity.
Of maturity. That's exactly right. I think what we talk about when we go out on tour every year is, are we going to measure actual yield or are we measuring potential? Yesterday in Indiana, it was a combination of the two. Talked to Brian about that last night on the meeting. We kind of decided that it's about 2/3 yield and 1/3 potential that we measured in the state of Indiana. Now over in Nebraska, that was all yield that we measured.
Oh, absolutely it was. And the one thing that I did notice is we all know about the storm damage that has happened this year, and we always see storm damage in that part of Nebraska toured through.
Yep.
But this year it seemed like it was maybe wider spread, and they definitely have southern rust. Some of those pictures of southern rust coming through, they haven't seen that since for a long time.
I've always said it wouldn't be an irrigated corn crop in Nebraska if it doesn't get covered up with common or southern rust at some point in the year. And the common rust probably isn't going to do a whole lot of damage to it, but that southern rust can be a real bugger.
And the other thing about the beans in Nebraska, too, as they went from South Dakota into Nebraska, instantly. I mean, it hit. I knew right when they were getting into Nebraska because the SDS comments were starting to come in. And I do think that the farmers over there have been setting themselves up for SDS protection in most cases with those seed treatments early on and getting the plants out there and, you know, doing the right management practices. But still, it's hard to get rid of all of it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Indiana and Nebraska fit into the overall picture when the guys at Pro Farmer put the estimates together for their crop estimates that comes out on Friday. All right, what else you got, Davis?
Yeah, let me burn through these really quick. Private exporters reported another daily sale, this time 192,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China during the 2020 and 21 marketing year. Yesterday, the S&P 500 hit a record high, capping the shortest bear market in history. It had reached its previous peak on February 19 before fear of the pandemic's economic effects took hold. The index has risen by more than 50% since a low on March 23. Here's another good one. President Trump in Iowa yesterday discussing the derecho storm that flattened bins, buildings, and crops in the state. Trump told the mayor of Cedar Rapids, quote, "We've come through for you and we will always come through for Iowa." The mayor urged the president to consider enhanced federal financing in light of the damage. Get this. Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa took the opportunity to again publicly urge Trump to direct EPA to reject retroactive gap year SREs under the RFS. Ernst tied the crop damage and loss of yield potential to the SRE applications, saying EPA should just dispense with the waiver request to bolster the farm economy in Iowa. And finally, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi suggests that Democrats might be willing to cut more from their proposal to reach an agreement on immediate needs and return to do more later. You bet.
Oh, signs of compromise from Pelosi. Holy
smokes.
Little. Good.
Just a hint. A hint. Yes,
well,
sir.
Well, hey, that's progress made in all directions there. If we can get the other side to compromise a little bit too, maybe we can find something and get something done. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Echokamp, the editor of The Scoop. Margie, how you doing?
Good morning, Chip. Lots to talk about this week, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Hey, this gene editing that has been, it holds a lot of promise for some quick plant breeding advancements. What's the latest?
Yeah, it's a technology, and you're spot on. There's been a lot of buzz about it, and the team at Calyx is celebrating 10 years as a company, but they're also looking to really have their high oleic soybean product be a springboard for a lot of other development. So they planted those high oleic soybeans on 72,000 acres in 2020, and now they're looking to license their gene editing technology with other companies and enhance their product pipeline. So that includes alfalfa with improved digestibility, as well as a wheat product with high fiber. And they're also looking to expand into products such as hemp. So a lot to come when it comes to gene editing.
You know, and the phenomenal thing about the editing side of things, Margie, is that you can make advancements that might take 3, 4, 8 years to make, and you can do it in a very short period of time.
Yeah, it's definitely a technology that puts crop advancements on a fast track. And Calyx is also celebrating the fact that they were able to pave a path with all the regulatory requirements
cool.
and get those that their soybean product approved and to the market in 15 months, something they're looking to do with those other crops.
That's fantastic. Good stuff, Margie. Hey, let's hear your Twitter handle again for The Scoop.
The Scoop, it's at Farmers Advisor. So check us out on Twitter. And we're also retweeting all these awesome reports from the crop tour this week.
That's wonderful. All right. Thank you, Margie. We'll talk to you later. That's Margie Echokamp, editor of The Scoop. Coming up next, we're going to get a look at Iowa's corn crop and the damage that was done from Kevin McNew.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
The 2020 Pro Farmer Crop Tour is brought to you by Pioneer. For the best agronomic advice for your farm, count on your local Pioneer team for year-round advice. Pioneer, an American seed brand since 1926.
Life is a gamble. You got to have that ace in the hole, Davis.
Or, you know, up your sleeve, pant leg, top of the boot, wherever. I don't think it's a hard and fast rule.
As long as it's convenient.
There you go.
You got to have there that ace in the hole.
Well, and you got to learn to play those cards right. You know what I mean?
See, now you're crossing over to Kenny Rogers there. Let's stay on George.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Well, you need to save something for a rainy day, all right? I don't think Kenny ever mentioned what to do if it rains.
Yeah. I've got ships passing in the night and everything in my head right now. Here we go. All right, let's bring in.
Do we have a guest or something?
We do. Let's get to it. Kevin McNew is the chief economist at Farmers Business Network. He joins us right now. Kevin, my friend, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing, Chip?
I'm doing just fine. It sounds like you've made a trip into Iowa to try to do some assessment of the damage that was caused by that August 10th derecho that blew through the state. Let's start in the western part of the state where the guys on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour are scouting right now. Stay east of 35 in your initial assessments here, Kevin. What do things look like?
You know, I mean, we did a text poll around farmers in Iowa that are part of FBN
okay.
Network, and you know, the strike zone, if you will, is really kind of central and eastern part of the state. That's mm-hmm. where we saw, you know, quite a bit of the damage. So, you know, not to say there's not damage in western Iowa, but I think the really big and eye-popping impacts are going to be starting in that center part of the state and moving east. You know, we found about 15 counties where farmers there reported half or more of their corn crop was laid down. So that's a pretty impactful number for those farmers there. I don't think we're going to find enough bushels to add up to really make a case for a strong bullish impact on the market here, though.
Okay. So how many farmers and how many responded to your poll, if I can ask that, Kevin?
Sure. We had, and this was, we did kind of the storm trajectory.
Sure.
It was a 700-mile path. So we had 1,300 farmers from our network that responded back to this question. And,
awesome.
And the question was really, really specific around how much of your crop was laid down. I know, you know, there's a lot of banter going around from government agencies saying this many acres were impacted. I don't really know what an impact means.
Right.
You know, an impact could mean a few leaves blew off.
Yep.
So we wanted to be laser focused and you know, at least get an assessment of how much of the corn crop was laid down. And so, you know, for Iowa, we came up with a statewide average number of about 15% of the corn acres were laid down. And then the question is going to be, as you know, what's going to be the impact on that? You can't necessarily zero out those bushels on those acres, but it certainly leaves a big question mark for the next 45 days or so as we get closer to harvest.
Yeah, Kevin, Emily Carlin is with us today, too, and she's got a question for you.
Yeah, hey, Kevin.
Sure.
So how has satellite imagery changed since the storm? I know that you guys do a lot of evaluation that way. And have you seen some of that, you know, that brown matter start to show up in your satellite imagery?
Yeah, good question, Emily. We actually laid that right over the top of our poll response from farmers, and it was just spot on. What our farmers were telling us is what the satellites were showing us. So, you know, we did see some initial impacts early on. You know, the first pass of the satellite, so to speak, did show some impacts on crop losses. So, you know, it'll be something to watch as we move forward. You know, the satellites are a valuable tool to help gauge kind of the crop impact here.
It's going to be fascinating to watch the progression of those satellite photos, Kevin, and see exactly how things do change. Because, boy, if it's broke off, it's going to show up in those satellites as dead plant matter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're measuring greenness in some sense from the satellites. And so, you know, when those things are no longer green, they're going to start to show up, and
exactly.
Certainly, it's going to make a footprint. So,
exactly. Are we talking about what, 2 million acres in Iowa?
Yeah, that's kind of what we're thinking. You know, 15% of a roughly 14 billion bushel crop, of planted acres. So, you know, we factored in around a 20% loss on yield based on what we think is a reasonable impact at this point.
Okay.
So that translates into roughly, you know, overall about 100 million bushel loss when we consider the outlying states as well. So again, 100 million bushels on a 15.2 billion bushel crop doesn't do much to change the trajectory of the market. Maybe it puts a floor under us, though, and we don't need to go back to those 320 levels we saw earlier.
Well, if total damage is 100 million bushels, Kevin, you can't rule out a drop back to those lows.
There's some things I would point to that are a little more favorable than where we were 30 days ago. I mean, the severe weakness in the U.S. dollar, you know, you're probably following that too, Chip. I mean, you know, currency values are changing finally for the farmer to be a little more favorable. You know, you've got some problems in Europe and Ukraine that could give us some support for corn. So, I don't want to say it's impossible to go back to 320s, but I'm feeling a little easier that, maybe we don't need to test that low.
Yeah, Kevin, so that 20%, 20% of the acres were affected and 15% of the crop was potentially gone, right? Out of that, and out of your survey polls too, was there much talk on, the crop that is going to be there, the storage holding capacity that has been damaged? Have you guys had any growers make comments about that?
Yeah, we actually did a follow-up poll on that, Emily. And so we came back a few days later and asked a similar question. What percent of your farm storage is damaged and not usable this harvest? And again, not surprising, the impact zone is very similar to where the crop problems line up. So that center to eastern part of Iowa, farmers there were kind of reporting, they lost 25%. Was kind of the norm of what we saw where people were impacted of their on-farm storage. Obviously some people lost higher, but I guess my takeaway from that, guys, is that I'm not as fearful that we're going to have a storage problem as I was, say, a week or so ago when you start seeing the pictures on Twitter and you hear about grain elevators going down and farm storage going down. There's just, there's 3 billion bushels of on-farm and commercial storage in Iowa. Mm-hmm. So, we're talking about, we probably lost 100, 150 million bushels of capacity. And, that's not a small number, and certainly it impacts the people that were affected. But I don't think it's going to lead to cataclysmic problems in basis. And, we haven't seen much downward pressure on basis at this point in those areas. We've seen basis weaken just a few cents.
Okay, Kevin, we should be watching rail rates, right? And the hopper cars? See what the happened to there?
Yeah, I mean, if there's a big issue around that, you would certainly expect that. The other thing we are seeing is barge rates start to move up. And so that's, probably negative for basis as well.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. So, do you think we've got that 181.8 bushels per acre for a national average corn yield out there?
I think we bring that down. We'll see what you guys say on your Pro Farmer crop tour. Obviously the early numbers are good from the far stretches of it. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what they say when we get into Iowa. But I think we're probably looking at 180, maybe 179, if the yield losses are bigger than what we think.
Okay.
But I still think, it's a record yield. I have a hard time saying anything other than, record yield. And, I don't think we have the ability to just keep moving higher here.
Right.
And I think that's what the market's telling us the last
Interesting.
Day or so.
Interesting. Hey, if you get a chance and you can find the data from the crop tour from 2018 when that record was set, start running some comparisons against the 18 numbers too.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Yeah, that's what we're starting to do. Emily and I are starting to do it. And hey, we were prompted by some people out in the industry sending emails in saying, take a look at it compared to 2018. And Brian Grady was all over it on Monday night. He was all over it on Monday night. Said, listen, you got to compare it to the gold standard, which was 2018. So we're starting to do a lot of that. And I don't know if it's going to match up to 2018 quite like we think it would or not. I don't know yet. Kevin, I always enjoy talking to you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Chip. Anytime.
You bet. That's Kevin McNew, Chief Economist at FBN, Farmers Business Network. Okay. When we come back, we are going to have a conversation with the scouts from the Crop Tour.
Pro Farmer Crop Tour is brought to you by Pivot Bio Proven. Predictable, productive, weatherproof. Get a reliable partner. Get the new nitrogen. Get Pivot Bio Proven.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady and senior market analyst Jeff Wilson out on the road for the Crop Tour this week, I'm going to take a look at the markets for you. I didn't spend much time on livestock trade yesterday, so I'm going to start there today. We've got some strength going in the live cattle market and in the feeder cattle market. The live cattle market, cash trade is already happening. It's Wednesday, guys. For the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we've been seeing trade throughout the week in that cash cattle market. So this is pretty encouraging. And it feels like maybe, we talked about it with Chris Swift on Friday, maybe the feed yards have got a little bit of leverage in here because cash bids are steady to $2 higher again out there in the Midwest. Lean hog futures also trading to the upside today. A lot of chart-based technical trade happening in the lean hog market right now. Wheat futures trading anywhere from 3 to 6, 7 cents higher in the HRW market. Spring wheat is also trading 5, 6 cents higher this morning. We've got the corn market down 0.75 cents. We've got the bean market up 2.75 cents to 3 cents. That bean sale that was announced this morning to China, 192,000 metric tons for delivery in the 2020-21 marketing year, helping to support that bean market. Also, I think we're getting some support from, you know, some of the conversation coming out of Crop Tour on whether or not this bean yield can match up with the numbers that we saw in 2018. Not 2019, but 2018 when we saw the record yields come in. Corn, under a little bit of pressure. I think the market is just trying to anticipate what the scouts are going to run into when they get into the really wind-beaten areas of Iowa later in the week. That's Markets Now right here on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Emily Garland with us. Davis is back in Sparkle City, and we're going to head straight out to the Crop Tour. On the western leg of the Crop Tour, we've got Sherman Newland. Sherman is a farmer and a risk manager from Illinois. How you doing this morning, Sherman?
Good, Chip. How are you?
Excellent. Also on the western leg of the tour, Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge out of Chicago. Good morning, Ted.
Yeah, buddy. How's it going?
Going great. Are you wearing your corn hat this morning?
Cubs. No, I'm wearing my Zahner Ag Hedge hat, but I should have a Cubs hat on. That's all I'm going to say. But
amen, brother.
Yeah, no. Amen.
Yep, 6-3 winner last night. Love that. Yeah. Mark Bernard's on the eastern leg of the tour. Mark is from southern Minnesota, where he's a certified agronomist there. Mark, welcome back for your, 17th Crop Tour?
Yeah, seems like it's been longer than that.
Love it. I understand that feeling. Oh, Mark, tell me. Okay, we've talked quite a bit about Indiana and the numbers that came out of Indiana, and we've talked about Ohio. Is there anything from those first 2 days that really stood out to you, Mark?
Well, the consistently inconsistent corn crop was the one thing that I took away from. But the other thing was that the beans really look like they've got some potential to hang in there, and if they get some rain, and really produce.
Right. Okay, so today you're making your way from Bloomington to Iowa City. I would assume that you're someplace in western Illinois. What are you seeing?
We're seeing some pretty good corn today relative to what we saw yesterday on our leg of the Illinois tour. We're starting to bump up over 200, you know, fairly consistently here. And we're also running into some moisture in the soil, which we were having a rough time with over in Ohio and Indiana. Okay. Beans are a little more fickle. We ran into some recrops, and there was a late planted field for whatever reason. But overall, they're not bad.
Okay. All right. Have you run into any storm damage in western Illinois yet?
We are just starting to touch it. We just crossed I-80, and with, you know, just like the light came on, and you go, oh, there it is, you know. So we're starting to see some of the stuff that's goosenecked and ripped up pretty good. Not flat or anything like that yet, but it definitely is going to be making it more of a challenge, I'm sure, as we go along.
Yep. Here. Yeah. No doubt about that. No doubt. Sherman Newland over on the west side. I want to get a farmer's perspective first here, Sherman, from the west side. South Dakota, Nebraska, you've been out there a couple of times. What's your takeaway?
Yeah, this is my third year, Chip. South Dakota, I thought was pretty good. I really did. I mean, especially the farther south you got towards the border, corn really picked up down through that area, and the pod counts were, you know, really high. So I was pretty impressed with South Dakota. I actually talked to a local farmer. He stopped by the field and said it was his field, and he told me, he said, this is going to probably be our best year we've ever had in South Dakota.
Yeah, it sure feels like everything is pointing in that direction, Sherman, for South Dakota. It sure does.
Yeah, it looked like it. It really did. And then yesterday we started in, you know, there in Nebraska, and what we saw on our leg of the tour, I was pretty darn impressed with. We only had one field of irrigated corn, and it was white, and it had hailed on it, so it wasn't, I mean, it was in like 158 or something like that. But other than that, almost every stop was over 200. We had some go 242, 235.
Dry land. You
know, it wasn't irrigated. And as we went on down towards the south, I was really impressed with it. The ear weight was phenomenal.
Okay.
I mean, it was really heavy corn. It's going to be, you know, big grain, heavy test weight corn, what we saw there in Nebraska.
Mark, you're not really, have you seen that to this point over in the eastern belt with those big, fat, heavy ears?
You know, not until today. Now on this leg of our route here, looks like we're starting to get into those big bangers, and Berto's got another name for it, but we can't put that on there.
No,
on
we're
the
not. We don't know. That's one of the reasons you're talking, and Berto is not.
Oh man, dear.
Yeah. Okay, Seifrin. Well, wait, Sherman, you're in Western Iowa. Yes. What are you seeing?
Yeah, we jumped ahead of Ted. He's on the route south of us. We started in Dallas and made one stop in Boone. Corn, both of the fields we stopped in was down, tangled up. I mean, it's going to be a long day if it's all going to be like this, because we've been down on our hands and knees getting underneath the corn, lifting it up, you know, trying to get an accurate count and look at it. From what I've seen, quite a bit of it could still be harvested. I mean, you know, from past experience, I know you can get a corn head under some of this, but if you got a reel, they may not like it. It's not going to be fun, but it could be harvested. The first stop was 157. The second stop was really good. I mean, for a dry area, that came in at 209. But the corn, you know, it's down in through here, and like I said, if it's going to be like this all day, it's going to be a long day.
Hopefully you're not that far from, if you're north of Boone, you're not that far of getting out of it, Sherman. I think you'll be okay. I think you'll be all right. Okay, Ted Seifert, you've heard those observations there. Anything different on your mind from the first 2 days?
Yeah, you know, so Sherman and our car, me and Eric, have sort of an interesting relationship, because we've been splitting routes with each other. And so yesterday we took the first half of let's go back to the first day, Monday. We didn't do South Dakota. We started in Nebraska.
Okay.
And we saw a lot of really not great stuff in northern Nebraska, and got better as we moved south, but really wasn't impressed with what we saw at first on the first first day of Nebraska. And then yesterday, we were in front of Sherman. We went through all except for two irrigated fields. So everything was irrigated.
Yep.
And it wasn't that fantastic. I mean, we were seeing, I think our high was at 235, but a lot of 208s, 202s, things like that, when, you know, we kind of thought we'd see a bit better than that. So the dryland corn in eastern Nebraska, according, you know, from what we were hearing from Sherman and those guys, sounded really great. But I was kind of not impressed with the irrigated corn. Now, today, we're running around near the Iowa-Missouri border in southwestern Iowa, and it's really hit or miss down here. There's definitely the haves and the have-nots. I mean, you go 2 miles and you get a really nice field, you know, 208 yield check, and then 2 miles later you get a 138. So you are seeing the dryness down here, but it is spotty. And I have a feeling that once we start heading north, we'll start seeing more of the dryness and then eventually get into that, you know, more of that down corn.
Yeah, Ted, compare then, how do the ears look? I mean, where you are finding ears in western Iowa right now, how does that compare to the other stops that you've taken the first 2 days of this tour? Because to me, what I'm seeing from some of the scouting reports is that it's really, really shallow kernel depth. There might not even be as many kernel rows around, indicating that this corn crop was stressed earlier on in the season than maybe even just what cracks in the ground are showing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. We've had two fields where, you know, we're talking about the boomers, you know, the baseball bats, you know, big, heavy corn ears. But the vast majority of what we're seeing has been, yes, pollination issues, tip back, shallow kernels, just not really good. Lots of signs of dryness and heat.
Gotcha. Mark, everybody's expecting a record corn yield. That was 2018. I know this is a little difficult for you and more difficult for Birdo, but think back 2 years to what you saw in the Eastern Belt. How does it compare?
You know, from what I can see right now, it's going to get close, but I have serious doubts whether it'll get there.
Okay.
We're just seeing a little too much inconsistency, and maybe as we move west, it's going to prove me wrong, but that's why we're out here. That's what we're trying to find out.
Yep.
Mark, just real quick here, tar spot in 2018 started to become a major issue for Illinois. How many of those are you finding out there today?
I have not found much for tar spot. There's been a little physoderma, a little bit of gray leaf, but that's been, you know, generally it as far as our route today. That's not to say that it isn't out here, but we just have not seen it.
Well, good. That'll knock this corn crop to the guzz.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, Sherman, I want your observation on that because you were out there in 2018 in the Western Belt. What do you think? How does it compare to 2 years ago?
Well, I mean, South Dakota, you know, probably relatively the same, maybe a little bit better, I'd say, for sure. I'm going to say Iowa's going to be, you know, significantly less than 18.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And
okay.
Nebraska, I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be pretty close in here. Only got about 30-40 seconds left here. Ted, put some market perspective on what you guys are seeing.
Well, you know, I think the market needs to take the South Dakota numbers with a grain of salt because we didn't really know what we were looking at last year. We had a crop that was so far behind. So when you see a big jump in yield potential and things like that, I think, that, again, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt because what we saw on tour versus where South Dakota ended up after really good fall weather was a bit different. But also, I'm going to say that the market's focus is now beginning to shift more from production into the demand.
Yeah.
China buying every day. China bought another 190,000 metric tons of soybeans here today. At some point, I believe we need to find a price that slows China buying down and then back it off again. But the market's job is to find China's price tolerance.
Exactly. Fellas, fantastic job. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you tonight. We'll be back with Ag Launch in a moment.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Ag AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Hey, Scrap Tour!
Yeah, just a reminder, we're going to have the final results for Illinois tonight at the virtual meeting. If you've not signed up for the Crop Tour meetings, just go to profarmer.com. There's a red banner right at the top of the page. Click on that, and you can get signed up for tonight and for tomorrow night. So final results for Illinois tonight, and we will have the results for Crop Districts 7, 4, and 1 in Iowa. We're not going to have all of Iowa, but we'll tell you about what's going on over there in the western part of the state. Okay, let's have a conversation right now with Margaret Oldham. She is with Ag Launch, joins us right now. Margaret, welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having us today. We're so excited to share a little bit of information about an upcoming challenge.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. We've also got Christoph Jaspe. He is with Nori.com. Christoph, welcome.
Great to be on here.
Excellent. Okay, Margaret, teach me. Okay, what is Ag Launch?
Yeah, so we're a very farmer-centric organization based out of Memphis, Tennessee. We have farmer networks in the Mid-South as well as states like Iowa and Oregon. We're connecting ag tech startups with really progressive farmers. We've got a great network of farmers who facilitate really productive and long-term relationships to help these founders accelerate their success. And the whole idea is that it's very farmer-centric, and all eyes are on what it does on the farm.
Very cool. So you're kind of a matchmaker. You're putting together some funding with the good ideas, right?
That's right, yes.
Cool. Okay, Row Crop Challenge. Explain it, what it is, and who's involved.
Yeah, absolutely. So Row Crop Challenge is actually a partnership between Farm Journal and Ag Launch. It started a couple of years ago, and we found that it's a really great way to focus in on new innovations and technologies that are focused on row crop production. It is the entry point to the Ag Launch 365 year-round acceleration program.
Okay.
So that's a little bit about it. It still involves farmers. We have investors that help us identify the top 10 startups, and then from there, six winners will go on to be in our on-farm preparation and trial phase.
Okay, so the good ideas, the innovations that come from this that you're looking for, what kind of ideas are you looking for this year?
Well, you've heard me say farmer a number of times,
so
it's not going to surprise you that we're looking for innovations that really address the big challenges that farmers face. So things like water management, labor issues, and we're very, very interested in kind of following what's being done now with the Cotton Trust Protocol. So we're really extending into things like harvest preparation, wildlife habitat, traceability, worker well-being. Those have always been on the radar, but we're focusing in a bit more. We're very interested in things that improve efficiency on the farm, improve or increase safety. Any value-added opportunities, maybe through traceability. And, of course, anything that addresses human labor needs is really important to us as well.
Excellent. Oh, that's very cool. Okay, let's bring Christoph into the conversation. Christoph, tell us about Nori.
Thanks. So, simply put, Nori's a marketplace for farmers to sell carbon credits. What that means is, if you are adopting practices on your farm that are increasing the soil organic matter or soil organic carbon, you can submit data through Nori and sell a unique asset in our marketplace.
You know, that the carbon credit and getting paid for that it's becoming a competitive marketplace, isn't it, Christoph?
I think so. I mean, as an entrepreneur, competition is what makes it exciting.
Exactly.
We think it's, you know, everyone wins if we all can collaborate together. And it's kind of weird because unlike a crop, which you can touch, weigh, smell, eat, we're talking about an abstraction of a new type of crop, which is new carbon in your soil.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and I got to mention that Nori was a winner of the Row Crop Challenge last year. So that's very cool. It's... It right now, I'll admit, Christoph, the whole carbon capture and getting paid for it still feels above my head, but I'm starting to understand it more and more all the time. So keep pounding away. I think we'll all start to figure out exactly how it's going to work. Margaret, the ag launch, you've talked about how important the farmer is to ag launch. How are farmers engaged in this row crop challenge?
Well, just like in the past, and just like the farmers selected NORI and Continuum Ag as part of our soil health and carbon sequestration interest, farmers will select, they'll mentor, coach, and trial all the technologies on the field. So our farmers will actually take time out of harvest to help us identify teams and technologies that they want to work with. Then they work with those founders throughout our program, helping them identify perhaps some pivots that they may want to take, but certainly informing their production. And typically we plan for at least three iterations on the farm, taking a technology from prototype to market and all along the way building farmer advocacy and farmer input as a foundation.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, Christoph, Nori, when you talk with farmers, obviously they want to be involved in the carbon capture for environmental reasons, but it's got to be a little more enticing when you can put some profitability or some financial incentive into it too, right?
Couldn't say it better myself.
Okay.
I mean, look, people might be storing carbon in their soils for all sorts of reasons, but when we think you put cash behind it, it makes it a really simple decision. And the row crop challenge was really invaluable for us because we needed to make sure that this has to work for the farmers first and get that input from the get-go. Because if it's not going to work for them, the company is not going to work.
Right, right. That's really cool. Margaret, how do we apply?
Yep, go to aglaunch.com, click on Accelerator Programming, or send me an email at innovation@aglaunch.com. We'd love to get your applications in. Deadline is August 31st, and our farmers will start making selections right away. Row Crop Challenge will be held virtually November 16th through the 20th.
Awesome. You guys, thank you so much. We appreciate the information. Got to check it out. That is Margaret Oldham from Ag Launch and Christoph Jaspe from NORI.com. Wow. Davis, Emily, we have packed a lot of information into this morning's show. This afternoon is going to be as awesome. Thank you for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Davis is going to handle it again. Jeff Wilson, Brian Grady, drilling down. Dan Huber is going to stop by again. Have a great day, everybody.